Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. One of the toughest things that can be faced by a girl or a woman of any age is the loss of her mother. Our guest, Hope Edelman, knows all about that. In fact, she knows more about it than most of us. Hope is an expert in the field of early mother loss and mother-daughter relationships. She's written extensively on those topics and is the author of the books Motherless Daughters and Motherless Mothers, among others.
Hope, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Can you give us some background as to how you came to be known as a leader on the subject of motherless daughters?
Well, Motherless Daughters was first published in 1994. And I think back on that, and gosh, I was so young. I had lost my mom as a teenager. In the 1980s, I was 15 when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was 17 when she died. And I went looking for a book on the subject to understand what I was thinking and feeling, because I didn't know any other girls who'd lost their mom other than my sister. And all of the books that I found were for adult women whose moms had died. It was almost as if there was no acknowledgement that this could happen when you were young. And about 10 years later, when I was in graduate school, I was still looking for the book and couldn't find it and decided that I would research and write it myself. So I interviewed more than 100 women and I surveyed more than that. And then the book came out in 1994 and it became an international bestseller right away because there was just nothing out there for these millions of girls and women who had been children or teenagers or even young adults when their moms had died. And now the book's been out for, that would be 24 years. It's in its third edition. And it's so I'm continuously updating it with the new research that's coming out and the new experiences that I have in my life as well.
And Hope, you were really bowled over by the response that you got to the book, weren't you?
I was. It was my first book, so I was fairly inexperienced. The marketing director at the publishing agency told me to fasten my seatbelt right before it came out. And I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll sell a couple thousand books because I'm an unknown quantity. And there was a lot of media attention around it. And ultimately, the book has now sold more than 1 million copies. It's out in 14 countries, 11 languages. It's about to be re-released in the UK and Germany because, unfortunately, every year, there's a new group of women or girls who are losing their moms and, you know, or who grow up into an age to become an age where they start looking for a book like I did. And then this one now is there for them.
How is it different for people to lose mothers at different ages?
Well, that the developmental phase of a child that a child has achieved will factor in there. I mean, if you're quite young, you may not even really understand what death is and be waiting for your mom to come back. If you're a little older and you understand that death is permanent, but you don't yet have the emotional capacity to really handle those feelings on your own, which is between ages about 7 and 11, that's a different experience. If you're a teenager and you're caught in the mother-daughter struggle, you may be left with guilt. If you're a young adult and you were just about to reunite with your mother on a more peer-to-peer level and you don't get to do that and you see all your friends having that opportunity, that again is different. But what we do know is that early loss gets folded into a child's developing personality. And it really does change who they become. It does, in fact, become part of their, maybe not their temperament, but their, you know, their personality, their worldview. And they carry that loss forward with them forever. It's not something they get over in a short period of time. And, you know, how a mother dies will also affect a child. If it's a sudden loss versus a long-term illness with a lot of debilitating years, you know, that so there are a number of variables, but age at time of loss is quite important.
I know you've written that losing a mother at a young age for you wasn't just a fact about you. It was the core of your identity. Explain more about that.
Well, it really felt that way. And I've, you know, met quite a lot of other women who feel the same way because it was such a profound event. And for many years, it seemed like the determining event that changed the, you know, the trajectory of the course of my life. It's like I thought that I was living inside of one story, and then this very tragic, abrupt event happened, and the story was derailed, and suddenly I was in a different family and heading toward a, you know, a different goals and a different future. It seemed, at least. So I had to adapt rather quickly. I would say it wasn't until I became a mother myself, really, that I felt like I had another experience that was equally as definitional, or maybe, you know, the publication of my first book. But I would still say that early experience really did in many ways shape my worldview moving forward. And it's dictated a lot of, you know, who I became as an adult and what I chose not to become as an adult as well. And that same is true for virtually every other motherless daughter that I've met and interviewed.
What is it that people universally say that they miss the most about having a mother?
Generally, if they had a mother who provided them with a sense of comfort and safety, because I think we need to acknowledge that not all women have that kind of mom, and not all of the moms who die were able to provide that to their daughters. But those who did get that from their moms tend to really miss her at transitional points in their lives, when they are moving from one phase to another, like a graduation or a wedding, the birth of a first child, or the birth of a second child even, a job loss, a job gain, a divorce, times when they would like to receive praise from their mom, when they would like to celebrate with her, when they feel that they would want to be comforted by her. Some other common traits among this group are a real concern about dying young, especially if they have children. There's a lot of energy around turning the age a mom was when she died, and passing that age, which I've done, and that's a fairly significant transition for women to get to become older than your mom ever got to be. And, you know, oftentimes some anxiety about losing another family member, knowing that if it happens, you could survive it, but also, you know, wanting to maybe be extra vigilant or controlling to ward off the possibility of having to suffer another loss like that later in life. That comes up a lot in this group, too.
How is a woman's development as a woman impacted by the loss of a mother at an early age?
Oh, that's a good question. And you know, that's really variable depending on the circumstances of the loss, what kind of support or family network she has afterwards, of course, what her temperament is like as well. So it's really hard to generalize. But what I can say is that a lot of women, and I know this from the retreats that I run, where we have, you know, sometimes 20 or 30 women in a room all together sharing their stories, that they feel somehow that they didn't get the knowledge of womanhood that other women have. I remember one woman saying, "It feels like everyone has the key to the city except me. You know, I don't feel like other women. When I walk into a room, I feel like everyone knows something that I don't." And that would be true even if they have no idea if the women in the room have mothers or not. They feel like, you know, the odd one out because they weren't raised by a mother all the way through childhood, or their mother. You know, many do have stepmothers. But when they do the retreats and they sit in the room with 20 or 25 other motherless daughters, they say for the first time they feel like they've found their tribe. You know, people who really understand what they, their thoughts, their fears, their challenges, their triumphs. There is certainly some kind of shared playbook that they seem to be living by without knowing it. One of the mottos of the retreat is, "We arrive as familiar strangers and we leave as sisters," because that's what it feels like for them. They bond so quickly. You know, they're so eager to meet other women who can really understand them because they have felt misunderstood by other women for so long.
How have the people that you've met along the way said that they like to stay connected to their mothers who have passed on?
That's an excellent question. And one reason that it's excellent is because it acknowledges the importance of staying connected to our loved ones after they die. For quite a long time in the 20th century, grief theory emphasize that we need to break bonds with our loved ones in order to move on. Like we need to emotionally detach from them.
Like get over it.
Exactly. That's where this comes from. It comes from really psychoanalysis in the 19 teens and this idea that you need to withdraw your energy, your psychic energy from that person so that take it back onto yourself and then attach to someone else. Well, you know, if you're breaking up with a boyfriend, for example, you can see how that might be beneficial. But if you've lost someone completely irreplaceable, like a parent or a child, it really doesn't work that way. And just in the past 25 or so years, grief theorists are now emphasizing the importance of staying connected to our loved ones. So when I'm working with motherless daughters whose loss is really far in the past, you know, decades ago, chances are they were not encouraged to maintain an inner relationship with their mom. So the work is about reconnecting them with the memory of their mom through photographs, through stories, if they don't have vivid memories of her, through memories, you know, telling stories of her if they do remember her. And when I work with adult women whose mothers have just died, it's about helping them stay connected. It's about acknowledging the ways in which you are similar, the ways in which you are different. It's maybe drawing some comfort from items of hers that you can keep around. Unfortunately, what often happened in the 70s, 80s, into the 90s, and this was true for my family, was that we were so poor as a culture, you know, talking about grief. We were so illiterate that people just tried to paper over all that pain and sadness and soldier on. And very, very common in a family where a mom died, especially if there was a dad taking care of the kids, for the pictures of the moms to come down off the walls, for, you know, her closet to be cleaned out, for her mementos to be tucked away because it was too upsetting for the dad or the grandma, or they believed the kids to be reminded that they'd had a mother who died. And then a stepmother would come in, oftentimes within the first 2 years, very common. And then the kids would be told, this is your new mom. And pictures of the new family go up on the wall. And that's really confusing for kids who still feel an inner connection and love for their mom, because that love has no place to go. So a lot of the work that I do is helping women reconnect with the memories of their moms and, you know, bringing some of her energy back into the present and feeling some kind of connection to her because, you know, half of their genetic material came from her.
Yeah. Thank you for being part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. And in just a minute, we'll tell you about a special offer for our listeners from our sponsor, Ritual.
Ritual makes a great product called Symbiotic Plus. We love it and we think that you might too. You may have heard us talk about it before. It's our daily 3-in-1 clinically studied prebiotic, probiotic, and postbiotic designed to help support a healthy, balanced gut microbiome. If you haven't thought about adding these to your daily routine, do yourself a favor and look into it.
Definitely. And if your gut's telling you it needs a little support, Ritual has your back. With Ritual Symbiotic Plus, you get 2 of the world's most clinically studied probiotic strains to support the relief of mild and occasional digestive discomforts like bloating, gas, and diarrhea.
Now, you may be wondering, why include a postbiotic? Well, it provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining and supports a healthy gut barrier. Symbiotic Plus comes in a delayed release capsule that's designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon, an ideal place for probiotics to grow and thrive.
Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. It's time to listen to your gut. Ritual is offering our Nobody Told Me listeners 10% off during your first 3 months.
Just visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
All you have to do is visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Again, visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
Now, I'm wondering something. Your mother passed away from breast cancer, as you said, when you were 17. Was she able to prepare you for her passing?
Not at all. Not at all. Although my mother struggled with breast cancer for 16 months, she was not told how sick she was. Or if she was told at the very beginning, she used, you know, really effective form of denial. And as far as I've been able to piece together, for those 16 months that she went through treatment, she was never told that her scans were showing cancer growth. So at the very end, I mean, so the kids in the family all thought she'd get better eventually. You know, doctors were treating her and, you know, she was still walking around and cooking and driving. In the end, when she died very quickly. It was a matter of just about a week, her very steep decline. And it was pretty shocking. And so we experienced some of the symptoms of having experienced a sudden loss. Because even though she'd been ill for 16 months. So no, she was not able to prepare us for it. And there was no opportunity to set anything in place or really say goodbye. And we suffered for that, you know. And when my dad died 23 years later, it was a very different story. He knew he was sick. Everything was transparent. He chose to go into hospice. We were with him. We talked with him. We helped him make the passage. It was actually a beautiful healing experience because we were able to say goodbye and tie up some loose ends. And so, I learned that was possible. And I would wish that for others in the future, not for them to experience what my siblings and I did in 1981.
I have some friends who have lost their mothers, and I'm always trying to not mention my mother when I'm around these friends. And I try and make sure I'm not saying my mom said this or I did this with my mom. But I never know if I'm approaching the situation in the right way, because sometimes I think I'm drawing more attention to it by trying to avoid the topic of mothers. Yeah. How should people approach this, and how can they support their friends without trying to rub it in their face that they have a mother?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Thank you for asking that, because I have heard women talk about this. Motherless daughters know you have a mom, and they don't mind generally if you talk about her. I think, you know, if it's just done with sensitivity, like if their mom has recently died and you're talking about an argument you had with your mom, for example, they might not find that very sensitive. Or, you know, if you're talking about everything you're going to do with your mom on Mother's Day and they don't have anyone to spend the day with. But just in the course of general conversation, most of the women that I've encountered want their friends to talk about their moms. They want them to share your life with them. And your mom is part of your life. And you know, they might feel like, oh, gee, I wish I had a mom that I could do that with. But that doesn't cancel out wanting to hear about your life or your mom in most cases. I mean, I would hope that, you know, if your friend were really upset by it, there would be signals and you would be able to read them. But for the most part, the women that I've met said, yeah, I noticed that my friends don't ever want to talk about their moms around me. And that makes me feel bad because they don't need to censor themselves. I know they have a mom. And they're, you know, sometimes those moms are even women that they know and they'd like to hear about them. So I think it's incredibly sensitive of you as a friend to ask the question, but I think there's some balance in there that you can probably strike.
How can you step in if your daughter has friends who've lost a mother and you'd kind of like to step in and help them and be a sort of a surrogate mother for them? Is there a right way or a wrong way to do that?
You know, I think that depends on, you know, the relationship and how close you were. My daughter has several friends who've lost their moms, and that's rough. My daughter's 16. Over the past few years, starting when she was about 9 or 10, and I try to make myself available to the family. You know, I go to the caretaker of the family, whether it's a or a grandparent, and I let them know that, you know, I have some experience in this field. And or even if you don't, you know, I notice that, or I think, you know, this daughter might be having a particularly hard time. If you'd like me to speak with her or you think she needs someone to speak with, I want you to know I'm available to you and your family. If you have a relationship with that child, you know, if the mom was a friend of yours and, you know, your kids are friends with those kids, I tread lightly with the teenagers, really lightly, because they tend to want to not feel different from everybody else. A few years ago, one of my daughter's teammates on her soccer team lost her mom very unexpectedly. And the other moms on the team wanted me to speak with her. And so one day when she was sitting on the sidelines, I sat with her and just treaded very lightly, you know, again, because she's a teenager, and said, I was a teenager when my mom died, and, you know, I've written a book about it. And And I'm so sorry, and it's so unfair, and you know, this is going to be a hard year. The first year is always the hardest. There's kind of no way around that, but I promise it'll start getting better after that. And the moms are here for you, and we care about you. And if you, you know, ever want to talk about it, please come to me. And I make myself a resource to the family too, not just the child, because sometimes the dad or the aunt or the grandma needs some support. And so I can talk with them and, you know, help them as well. Because it really is, you know, it's a family loss, not just a daughter's loss. So I try to see, you know, who in the family system might also need someone to talk to or get some support from.
What other advice do you have for getting through that first year and going through that first cycle of dates, like birth dates, the date of death, and Mother's Day?
Yeah, I think self-care is really important during those times because grief will tend to bubble up. Especially around Mother's Day, like you said, the holidays, your own birthday, your mother's birthday, because you're going, it's the year first, you know, you're going through your first birthday without your mom, your first Christmas without your mom, first Thanksgiving without your mom, and then comes the anniversary of death a year later. And so it's like, you know, a whole revolution around the sun to feel what it's like to have each of those events occur without your mom, and you're relearning how to live in the world without her. And then once you've done it once, you sort of have a sense of how it might be next time. So it's a little easier, or what you do or don't want to do on that day. And over time, you know, it can be really helpful to create a ritual that's meaningful for you on those particular days, so that you have a way of remembering her or honoring her and bringing her, you know, into the day in some way rather than hiding under the covers and trying to block her out, because that doesn't feel good. You know, it yeah. often feels better to just make her part of the day. This year on Mother's Day, you know, I was telling stories about my mom to my younger daughter, telling her stories about my childhood, stories about my mom. It felt great. And my grandmother too.
I remember my mother telling me that she thought she was greatly affected by the death of her mother for at least 2 years after her mother passed away. And I'm wondering what you've learned about the length of time it takes to heal somewhat after the loss of a mother.
Well, you know, typically what's called the acute grief phase, where you're really in that phase of disbelief and shock and numbness, and it varies from person to person. But, you know, generally the parameters are like 6 months to 2 years. Some people quicker, some people later. It's very variable. Grief is so individual. There is no one size fits all. And so in your mom's case, it was 2 years. You know, I was 17, and 6 months later, I was pretending that I was doing fine because I thought that's what I needed to model to the world. But it actually, frankly, took me more like 10 years before I could talk about her without crying. That was a real congested kind of grief, which is not unusual in children. But for adults, you know, generally 1 to 2 years. And if psychotherapists start seeing, you know, real intensity of mourning still after 2 years sometimes, and then they'll start recommending some professional assistance to work through whatever might be lingering. If there's a lot of guilt or a lot of ambivalence in the relationship, that can prolong it.
What do you do on those days when the tears just won't stop and you feel like you can't go on?
Journaling helps a lot of women. Picking up the phone, talking with a close family member or a friend, and also just, you know, honoring the sadness. We're not great at sitting with sadness sometimes. You know, it's like kind of the last emotional frontier. Sometimes that sadness, I think, is there for a reason. It's there because it's an expression of the love that we felt for someone. If that sadness starts feeling like despair, and, you know, there are thoughts of self-harm, of course, then, you know, I'm recommending professional assistance, professional help or evaluation. But if it's just sadness, like, God, I miss my mom so much today, and I really wish she were here, and it hurts, you know, it's just sometimes letting that sadness pass through you, doing something that's nice for yourself. If you can make it something that connects you to your mom, even better. Also, I'm doing a lot of work with women now in coaching and at retreats, doing work with their younger self. If you were, you know, young when your mom died, there might be a piece of you that feels like it got stuck back there fast. And we go back and we look at how old is that, you know, kid who feels stuck, and what got stuck, and how can we help her get what she needs now? Because the one who's going to give it to her is you as an adult, really. And it's really fascinating, sometimes life-changing work to go back there and look at that kid who didn't get what she needed and see if there's a way to give it to her now.
You know, Hope, I feel very fortunate in that the day before my mother died, she said to me, you know, there is a time to everything in life, and this is my time to go. And you need to know that I'm okay with that, and I need to know that you're okay with that. And I thought that that was a wonderful way for her to prepare me, because she really passed away pretty suddenly. I mean, she suddenly became ill, and she knew what was going to happen in the next 48 hours or so, and she told me that. And I'm just wondering what advice you might have for the mothers who are out there listening who think, how do I prepare my child for my eventual passing?
Mm-hmm. Well, your mother gave you a beautiful gift. Because
she did.
It's really hard to face one's own mortality with that kind of clarity and
yeah.
that kind of generosity.
Yeah, well, she was 85 at the time, too. So, I mean, you know, she and I was obviously, you know, a mature adult as well. But I'm just wondering what could mothers do to make it easier in the future for their children after they've passed on?
Well, I'll share with you something that I find enormously poignant, and it's something that I learned from a man who I interviewed for my next book. My next book is about the long arc of grief for men and women, any kind of early loss, you know, what it looks like 20, 30 years later. This was a man whose mom was diagnosed with colon cancer. She lived much longer than her prognosis, but at the time, she did two things. One was she started keeping a journal for each child, and in which she was just recording her thoughts and feelings, but also stories about them when they were young. The other thing she did, and I think this was brilliant, was she looked back in her history and she chose one person from each phase of her life and asked them if they would be her story keeper. And when her children wanted to know what she was like as a child, what she was like in high school, what she was like in college, they knew who to call to get those stories. And so I'm completely healthy. I have a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old, but I've already started identifying those people because I think, what a brilliant idea. You know, if I'm not here one day and my kids want a story, then they know who to call, you know, and I have friends who've agreed to do it. I think that's a wonderful way to keep preserving your own memory for your children, in addition to anything that you can physically do for them or leave for them.
What advice do you have for people who have living mothers but don't have close relationships with them? Why is it so important to try and fix these now and not just think that we have infinite amount of time to fix these?
Well, that's a really difficult situation. There are many ways to be motherless. And some of those relationships, you know, frankly, are better off not fixed. If a mother has been abusive or a mother, you know, is really difficult or doesn't, you know, want to have a relationship with her daughter. But I can tell you that women who did have relationships that might have been considered fixable, who then lost their moms to death before they had an opportunity to do so, really struggle, you know, with the ambivalence and some guilt about having not been able to do it. But you still can heal that relationship after a mom dies. But, you know, like I said, there are many forms of mother loss, and Motherless Daughters does address other types of mother loss, abandonment, mental illness, incarceration, addiction. There are lots of reasons why a mom can't be there to mother you the way you need to be mothered. But the daughters with living mothers, you know, it's slightly different because there is a physical mom there that they, you know, they have hope of reconnecting with at some point. And so there's a different issues of self-value and self-worth when the mom is present but doesn't want to or isn't able to be that mothering figure in your life. And then it becomes really important to identify what it was you didn't get and try to find some other way to get it if you can't mend that relationship with her. If you're dealing with a mental illness or extreme narcissism, that mom might not ever be able to give you what you need, but you still deserve it, and you still deserved it as a child. So you have to look for ways that you can get it in adulthood.
And Hope, tell us about the Motherless Daughters retreats that you're involved with.
Yes, for about the past year and a half, I've been co-leading retreats. They're mainly on the East Coast and the West Coast. There's one in August in Los Angeles, one in September in Connecticut. These two retreats are for women who are 21 and under when their moms died. And we do a series of exercises and journaling and lots of story sharing. And the women really bond and create a support network for themselves that lasts long beyond the groups. But as I said earlier, the experience of being able to sit in a room with other women who really get you, they say it's the first time I feel like I have a whole group of women who really get me? And we go back and we look. Mainly we look at what were the messages you got about grief as a child? What coping strategies did you develop to manage that? Because most kids didn't get support when they were younger. Are those survival strategies or coping strategies still serving you today? If they are, that's great. If they're not, how can you get rid of them and what can you replace them with? Because a lot of women come when they're feeling stuck in some area of their life, or they're about to have a big transition like a wedding or reaching their mom's age at time of death. And they want to be able to talk with other women who will understand. So we do generally between 2 and 4 retreats per year. I did an event in the UK in April, so we're hoping to move this over there as well.
Hope, our show is called Nobody Told Me, and at the end of each show, we like to close the interview with the question, what's your Nobody Told Me lesson? So before you lost your mother, before you went on this journey trying to help other motherless daughters, what could nobody have told you?
Nobody told me that grieving the loss of such a close loved one is a lifelong process. It doesn't ever go away, but that doesn't mean it's a lifelong struggle. It's just something that's always there and is constantly being revisited and renegotiated. But I thought that I would go through the 5 stages of grief and then I'd be done. And that it's not like that for very many people. There's a great relief, though, in just accepting, okay, you know, this is a lifelong process and I'm going to try to do it as gracefully as I can.
And it's part of life for the vast majority of us at some point.
Yes, it is.
Hope, we thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
You're so very welcome.
We have been talking with Hope Edelman. HopeEdelman.com is her website, and her books include Motherless Daughters and Motherless Mothers, among others. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.